Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, July 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and a tool I can use to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. When you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope you do that soon and often, because it usually generates questions. And that's why we're here 5 days a week in our current format for 2 hours a day. You can give us a call at 563-999-3581. Or you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh at mindshiftersacademy.org. And it's especially useful to do that if you're listening through the archives, because then we can get your email question and discuss it, and then you can listen to it again in the archives. You can also download a whole host of files from the archives where people have called in and they've either given powerful testimonials about how the work has affected their life positively, or they're giving, or they're asking for how to be stepped through the tool. And so those, I forget how many, but there's well over a dozen of those highlighted. They've been curated out from the archives as highlight shows. And if you listen to those on a regular basis or over and over again, it can serve as a tutorial and you can get your bachelor's degree in how to use this tool. We're also working with the Course in Miracles lessons, the workbook lessons this year. Yesterday was the 189th day of the year. I didn't do that lesson. And today is the 190th day of the year. And we'll get to that. I wanted to back up, though, and listen to what Pam Grout has to say about Lesson 189. Lesson 189 simply reads, I feel the love of God within me now. I feel the love of creation. I feel the love of love itself within me now. And you can read the workbook lessons. They're available free at acim.org. And as usual, this lesson has 10 or more paragraphs of commentary. But what I'll read from the commentary is paragraph 7, where it says, simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. Lay aside all concepts you have learned about the world. Lay aside all the images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, good or bad. Empty it of every thought it judges worthy and all the ideas of which it is ashamed. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught you, nor one belief you ever learned from anything. Forget this world, forget this course, and come with completely empty hands unto your Creator. Pam Grout, lesson 189, she titles it, If I Had to Pick Just One. She quotes Pete Holmes as saying, it's all about having a clean antenna. Pam writes, I get this question a lot. What's your favorite country or city or destination in general? And she's a travel writer, so that's why she gets that question. She says, I have a couple of pat answers. Either I answer with the city, the country, or the destination I last visited, because, after all, that's what lovers of travel do. They fall in love with every place, everything, and every person. Or I point out that, just like you don't want pizza at every meal, you can't narrow down your faves to just one. It depends on an evolving string of moods and desires. My favorites change. The one question I've never gotten is, what is your favorite Course in Miracles lesson? If anyone wants to know, lesson 189 is definitely in contention. And here's why, according to Pam. It promises a world alive with hope and blessed with perfect charity and love. Number two, it promises the world, when seen anew, keeps me safe from every form of danger and pain. Number three, it promises reality, the truth I block with my fears, and it offers endless wells of joy. My assignment is to release self-produced holograms of malice and attack. These problematic holograms are not real. I made them up, and I continue to invest in them by staring at them, believing in them, trying to fix them. But let me repeat, they are not real. Point number four. And this is my all-time favorite part. I don't have to do anything. The universe shows up with endless benevolence and generosity the very minute I open the valve, promises boundless joy as soon as I ask. It shows up as soon as possible in joyful and immediate response. Point number five. It also says, forget this world, forget this course. Come with wholly empty hands. W-H-O-L-L-Y. Whole, completely empty hands. It tells me to let go of every single thought the past has taught me and every idea I learned before now. So, my favorite destination? I have no idea. My favorite course lesson? Definitely 189. Maybe I'll throw the rest away and practice it daily for the rest of my life. What is that lesson again? Coming completely empty in mind and hand, I feel the love of creation within me now. Today's lesson 190, I choose the joy of God instead of pain. Pain is the wrong perspective. When it is experienced in any form, it is proof of self-deception. Dr. Michael Rice has in one of his earlier worksheets, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. Now he has written it as, if I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. The Course in Miracles workbook says, it's not a fact at all. There is no room and no form it takes that will not disappear if it's seen correctly. For pain proclaims God as cruel. How could it be real in any form? It witnesses to the God, the Father's hatred of his Son, the sinfulness he sees in him, and his insane desire for revenge and death. Well, some religions believe in all of that. The Course in Miracles says none of that's true. Pain is a sign that illusions reign in place of truth. So let's call peace on this foolishness. It is your thoughts that cause you pain. It is them alone that cause you pain. Nothing external to your mind can hurt you or injure you in any way in this true spiritual sense. My holy brother, think of this a while. The world you see does nothing. It has no effects at all. It merely represents your thoughts. And so when you're in pain, you can be assured your thoughts are in error. The world may seem to cause you pain, and yet the world, as causeless, has no power to cause anything. As an effect, it cannot make effects. As an illusion, it is what you wish. Your idle wishes represent its pains. Pain is the thought of evil taking form. So lay down your arms, come without defense, into the quiet place where heaven's peace holds all things still at last. Here you will understand there is no pain. Here does the joy of God belong to you. And so again, we make the only choice that can ever be made. We choose between illusions and the truth, or between pain and joy, or between heaven and hell. Let our gratitude unto our teacher fill our hearts, as we are free to choose our joy instead of pain, our wholeness, holiness in place of sin, the peace of creation instead of conflict, and the light of heaven for the darkness of the world. Pam Grout writes, A Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 190, titled, Is There Room in Your Life for Magic? She quotes Mary Carr, who said, the brain's natural instinct is to judge, but so is the urge to boink the UPS dude. Pam writes, it's possible to live in a state of uninterrupted peace. It's called enlightenment. In Lesson 190, I choose joy instead of pain. This explains why most of us don't come close. Point number one, a false self masquerades as us. We place all of our attention on this little self so that there is no more real or lasting or solid nothing or solid than Eleanor Shellstrop from The Good Place. This made-up hologram blocks our connection to the sacred, the limitless life force. Point number two, the life force got renamed, rebranded, and dishonored. The popular nickname for this realm of beauty, goodness, and infinite vastness is God. But as I've already made clear, God is a concept. God has been misused and deformed. Point number three, enlightenment is regarded as the provenance of a select few. You know that false self I mentioned earlier? It likes to promote the idea that enlightenment is a superhuman accomplishment. People, this is our natural state. We are connected to an immeasurable, indestructible life force. Because we see ourselves as isolated fragments, we plod through life pretending to be something we're not. Point number four, a dumb, primitive creature mans the dials. And by that, I mean our thoughts, which compulsively judge, compare, label, and define. And these thoughts block us from feeling our connection. So that's our lesson for today and Pam Grout's commentary and the lesson for yesterday, which is Pam Grout's favorite. And we have 40-some minutes left to talk. What's your comment? What's your question? How can we serve you today? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? How would it serve you to spend this next 40-some minutes? We had a support group last night in which we listened to a Guy Finley lecture that he gave on Wednesday. And the essence of it is basically the same as the last two Course in Miracles lessons, that when we create a belief that we are small and limited, we create our own pain. When we let the pain that we experience wake us up to the need for something to be acknowledged within us, when we retrain our brains out of what they've been trained into, which is to blame people and things outside of us for its upset, then we can look at every interaction we have with the world or any other relationship as our teacher. And it's there to teach us all about everything within us that blocks us from knowing and loving life more abundantly. And so every negative emotional state that I have, every frustration, every anger, ends up alerting me. If I'm able to reprogram my brain, it alerts me to the idea that my thoughts are off the mark. There's a Stoic writer from antiquity, Marcus Aurelius, and from the brain pickings, which is a wonderful, brainpickings.org, which is a wonderful way to get some good inspirational material or to stay plugged into some of the great wisdom of the past. The Stoic antidote to frustration. Marcus Aurelius on how to keep your mental composure and emotional equanimity when people let you down. Now, if you go back to, I think it was Tuesday morning, and that Mind Shifters podcast, you'll hear me talk about how I had this breakthrough experience Tuesday morning. Of course, I've been working on it rather consistently for over 2 weeks related to an issue that's been ongoing for over 2 years. But in the past couple of weeks, there's been even more activity and more worksheets on my part, more EFT tapping, more neuroemotional technique sessions, et cetera. And reading something like this helped nudge me in the direction of more strict application of the tools. So here's the reading. The vast majority of our emotional and spiritual suffering comes from the violent collision between our expectations and actuality. As we dust ourselves off amid the rubble, we pick ourselves up bruised and indignant. We further pain ourselves with the exertion of staggering emotional energy on outrage at how actuality dared to defy what we demanded of it. The remedy, of course, is not to try and bend actuality and the actuality of an impartial universe to our will. The remedy is to calibrate our expectations. Now, this is a remedy that might feel far too pragmatic to be within reach when we are in the heat of that collision moment. But also, this is one that has profound poetic undertones once you put it into practice. Walt Whitman understood this when he was felled by a paralytic stroke. He considered what makes life worth living, and he instructed himself to, quote, tone your wants and tastes low down enough and make much of negatives and mere daylight and the skies, close quote. He spared himself the additional self-inflicted suffering of outrage at how his body failed him. Perhaps he did that because, having proclaimed himself the poet of the body and the poet of the soul, he understood them to be one and the same thing. So he squandered no emotional energy on the expectation that his suddenly disabled body would be able to perform the way it did before the stroke. He simply edited his expectations to be in accord with his new actuality, and he sought to find his joy there, within these new parameters of being. What is true of the poetics of our own body-soul is as true of the poetics of relationship. Relationship, that beautiful and terrifying interchange between separate body souls. Little siphons the joy of life more surely than the wasted energy of indignation at how others have failed to behave in accordance with what we expected of them. So there are few things that can kill our joy faster or more thoroughly than us feeling indignant because somebody fails to meet our expectations. 2 millennia before the outrage culture of the current internet, the lovesick queer teenager turned Roman emperor and Stoic philosopher Marcus Aurelius born April 26, 121 and died March 17, 180. He addressed this curious self-mauling tendency of the human mind with characteristic precision and insight and an unsentimental problem-solving in the notebooks that became his Meditations. It's a timeless book newly translated and annotated by the British classic scholar Robin Waterfield. Marcus Aurelius wrote largely for and to himself, much like Tolstoy wrote his Calendar of Wisdom and Bruce Lee wrote his Calibrated Core Values. So, epochs before the birth of probability theory, Marcus Aurelius begins with a probabilistic statistical consolation. He writes, whenever a person's lack of shame offends you, you should immediately ask yourself, so is it even possible for there to be no shameless people in the world? It isn't, and you should therefore stop demanding the impossible. This shameless person in front of you is just one of those shameless people who must necessarily exist in the world. You should keep the same thought readily available for when you're faced with devious and untrustworthy people, and people who are flawed in any way. As soon as you remind yourself that it's impossible for such people not to exist, you will be kinder to each and every one of them. It's also helpful immediately to consider what virtue nature has granted us human beings to deal with any given offense, that virtue being gentleness, kindness, respect, and it's there for us to counteract the effects of discourteous people. Brain Pickings writes, millennia before William James lit the dawn of modern psychology with the radical assertion that our experience is what we agree to attend to. Our experience is created by what we agree to attend to. Millennia before that, Marcus Aurelius serves that classic Stoic cocktail of simply worded, obvious truths that are difficult truths to live up to. And he says, the things of the world cannot affect the soul. They lie inert, outside it, and only internal beliefs disturb the soul. You will find that none of the people who make you lose your temper have done anything that might affect your mind for the worse. Outside of the mind, there is nothing that is truly detrimental or harmful to you. Your mind is the only thing that can be truly detrimental or harmful to you. After all, you even have the resources in the form of your ability to think rationally to appreciate that this other person was likely to commit the fault that they committed, yet you forgot it and you're now surprised that he did what he did. He goes on, first, do not be upset. Nothing happens that is not in accord with universal nature. And before long, even you won't exist at all, just like your heroes. Second, put your gaze on the matter at hand and see it for what it is. And then, keeping in your mind your obligation to be a good person, and keeping in your mind the demands of your humanity, go right ahead and do in the best you can in the way that seems to you the most just. And do it with kindness, modesty, and without hiding the truth of your feelings. He uses the word dissembling, which means to conceal your true feelings. He goes on to say, always define or describe to yourself every impression that occurs to your mind so that you can clearly see what the thing is like in its entirety, stripped to its essence. Tell yourself its proper name and the names of its elements that it consists of and into which it will eventually be dissolved. Nothing is more conducive to objectivity than the ability to methodically and honestly test everything that you come across in life and always look at things in such a way that you consider what kind of part each of them plays in what kind of universe and what value it has for the universe as a whole. So, if something happens and my mind judges it as bad or wrong, that's clearly, completely, and only happening in my mind. As life unfolds, it's just life unfolding. And if I could see all of it and all of the ramifications, there would be no anger or upset in me. But instead, I focus on my interpretation of it. So what was happening? A situation happened a couple of years ago, and I had a response to it. I did the best I could, trying to be the best kind of person I knew how to be, and I set out to reach a goal. And that goal never got met. After a few months, it still hadn't been met. After 6 months, it hadn't been met. After a year, it hadn't been met. After a year and a half, it hadn't been met. After 2 years, it hadn't been met. I just kept trying to find slightly different ways to satisfy that goal, to reach that goal. No luck. Occasionally, I would gain some satisfaction for one of the attempts I had made, but little, if any. And over time, I realized I was still churning, having labeled something that happened as bad or wrong or shouldn't be happening, and generating inside of myself negative emotional states or tension or frustration. after I read certain things like, well, after I kept teaching these tools, come back to basics, do your EFT tapping, do some breath work, do some worksheets, cancel the goals, do a targeted journaling session so you do a core dump of what's in your mind that you're hiding from yourself. After I did that enough times, you know, all things considered, it happened fairly quickly. It only took me about 2 years and 3 or 4 months. I finally woke up and realized I was stuck doing the same kind of thing over and over and over again and not getting any effective results that I wanted. Results were happening, of course, but they weren't what I wanted. And without realizing it, I had trained myself to believe that I was right and the world was wrong. And then, fortunately, something kept me continually just applying and reapplying the tools until eventually Tuesday morning, I had an aha experience like few I've ever had in the 17 plus years of doing this work. And that aha experience led me to the realization, oh my gosh, I'm preaching that if whatever I'm doing isn't working, I should try something else. That's the first of the 10 bottom line observations I hand to patients when they come into my office. The problem is, I couldn't see how the very thing I was doing is what was causing the problem. And that's exactly like one of the stories that's in the intro of the book, Leadership and Self-Denial. And I've read this before. It's right in the intro, and it says, you know, let's give an example of what's at stake here. Consider the following analogy. An infant is learning how to crawl. She begins by pushing herself backward around the house. So she's able to use her hands to push herself up. And as she keeps pushing, she just scoots around backwards. Now, as she's backing herself around the house, she gets lodged beneath the furniture. Once she's there, she starts thrashing about crying and banging her little head against the sides and the undersides of the furniture pieces. She is stuck, and she hates it. So she does the only thing she can think to get herself out. She pushes even harder. It's the only thing she knows how to do. The result is it worsens her problem. She's more stuck than ever. So if this infant could talk, she would blame the furniture for her troubles. After all, she's doing everything she can think of. The problem can't be hers. But of course, we as adults who've learned how to ambulate forwards, backwards, and sideways, we realize the problem is hers, even though she can't see it. While it is true that she is doing everything she can think of, the real problem is precisely that she cannot see how she is the problem. Having the problem she has, nothing she can think of will be a solution. Self-deception, as they write in this book, is like this. Self-deception blinds us to the true causes of problems. And once we're blind, every solution we can think of will actually make things worse. Whether at home or at work, self-deception obscures the truth about ourselves, corrupts our view of others and our circumstances, and inhibits our ability to make wise and helpful decisions. To the extent that we are self-deceived, both our happiness and our leadership are undermined at every turn. And it's not because of the furniture. That's from the intro to the book, Leadership and Self-Deception. And I was essentially, for 2 years plus, just like that infant backing around, trapped under the furniture, doing more and more of the same thing in slightly different ways, pushing harder, pushing less hard, crying for a while, then banging my head and thrashing around again for over 2 years. And then finally, because of the grace of the tools and the power behind the tools, if I just kept at it enough, if I just asked to be shown enough, eventually a new perspective dawned. And it was as though someone had finally turned on the lights. And I was able to see from a new perspective how the very things that I've been trying to do for over 2 years were keeping me stuck under the furniture. And before I had that sight, that insight, that flash, that connection, I could not see how what I was doing was actually keeping me stuck and making my stuckness worse. So that's what we're promoting. We're promoting learning the tools and using them. Learning them and applying them daily. If not daily, then at least many multiple times during a week. Because this is the mental emotional hygiene that is every bit as important in our lives as the physical hygiene that so many of us practice. Those of us who are gifted enough to have clean water and running water in our homes, etc. Most of us practice physical hygiene multiple times a day. And what we're talking about in this work, what we're offering as a set of tools, is the equipment needed to do mental emotional hygiene multiple times a day. So we have 20-some minutes to talk. I'll take a breath and get a sip of water, and I'll remind you of the phone calling number, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We've got 5 or 6 people in the queue and 1 person in the chat room. How can we support you today? What's a question? What's a comment? There were 2 books by that group, the Arbinger Group, that really, really mirror the work that the Michael Rice team and Jeannie put out there. And they're worded, they're designed to be more palatable for the corporate world. Leadership and Self-Deception, and I think the other one is Anatomy of Hope. So how can we support you today? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. And what have we got? Basically 20 minutes left before Michael and Jeannie or somebody come on to take the second hour. The essence of the talk last night with Guy Finley was what we get by interacting with others is information about the parts of ourselves that we can't see when we're alone. So every irritation I have in a relationship is not there to teach me about the problems in the other person. Every irritation I have in a relationship is there to teach me about pain or sadness or fear that I have inside me that hasn't been resolved. And it's only by turning my focus inside myself and my willingness to look anew and usually apply tools, it's only through that process that I get to discover what I've been hiding from myself. So as I'm in relationships with people, every relationship at every level can potentially serve the same purpose of giving me the information about my next piece of work. Yeah. He talks about being outdoors at sunrise or sunset and being moved to this experience of joy, brilliance, aliveness. And he talks about how that's simply an awakening of what's already in me. It's not that the colors of the sunrise actually put an energy in my system that resulted in joy. It's that my experience of it resonates the joy that's already in me, the beauty, the creativity that's already in me. And as that's resonated into activity through my recognition, and I, you know, recognition is the word to use there, I recognize it outside of me because it is inside of me. And it's that recognition resonated into activity that I'm experiencing. It's not the sunrise or the sunset that's causing my joy. Just as in a relationship, it's not another person outside of me and their behaviors or their refusal to do behaviors I think they should, them doing behaviors I think they shouldn't or refusal to do behaviors. It's not that that's causing my upset, my pain or my fear or my sadness. So in this way, relationships offer us a chance to learn and grow that can't happen any other way. That's the point of the talk we listened to last night with Guy Finley. And I freely promote that because they're available absolutely free. You don't have to pay to listen to those talks. You can go to guyfinley.org/channel, C-H-A-N-E-L. And all you have to do is give them an email address, and they'll immediately open up the link, and you can have access to the last year plus of 3 days a week they've done talks. So Guy will do a talk on Wednesday evening, and he'll do a talk on Sunday. I think it's about 11 o'clock our time on Sunday morning. And then on Friday evenings, students at the Life of Learning Foundation have a talk and discussion. And since the coronavirus hit, they have chosen to put all of those things out for free. So I've turned on the microphone for area code 815. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Dr. Tim. This is Laura.
Ah, Laura, hello. Welcome, Laura. How can we support you?
Well, I've had a little trouble, so I was only listening for a few minutes, but the idea that relationships are there to help us grow, when and how do we know that we've grown as much as we can from a relationship, I guess, is a question.
Well, you can't ever know for sure, but you know what many people ask when we're talking about this kind of a situation is, does that mean I'm supposed to stay and take abuse? And the answer is no, right? And okay. And Guy Finley is very quick to say, look, nothing about these teachings is designed to make people or help people or excuse people for staying in an abusive situation. So if the pattern is experienced by me as abusive at any moment, it's perfectly fine for me to say, okay, I've had enough, and go my own way. But if I've done that because I have anger, fear, sadness, hurt come up in me,
mm-hmm.
if I don't leave and start doing my own work on the anger, fear, sadness, and hurt that's come up in me, if I blame that anger, fear, sadness, or hurt on someone outside of me, I've just built a prison for myself and thrown away the key.
Mm.
So that's the short answer. It's okay to leave at any time. And I leave, and if I have any negative emotional experience left, I want to keep doing my work on that. So one of the things that somebody was asking me just the other day was, so how do you know when it's okay to leave? And I said, well, after I've done enough work on my emotional state so I feel completely okay staying or going.
Right?
I want to be in a place where I feel completely okay if I stay and completely okay if I leave. And then I know that the choice I'm making is going to be made with higher quality data points. You know, I like to talk about how when I learned the neuroemotional technique, it requires, you know, muscle testing and energy systems. And when we learned that, they talked about how they did it with Olympic runners. And they would take them out to the track, and they're doing their time trials, and they wouldn't do so well. So they'd go in, and they would do, with the sports psychologist, they would do this energy work, and they would have them make statements like, I'm okay winning. And they would test their arm, and they'd find out they weren't really okay winning. They had emotional blocks to winning and doing their best. And after they cleared all of those, then they would ask them to put their arm up and say, I'm okay losing. And the athletes would recoil and say, I'm not even going to say that. I don't even want to entertain that thought. But they would say, listen, this is the way to do this, right? I need to clear it up so I'm going to be mentally, physically, and emotionally okay whether I win or lose. And then I'm absolutely free to do my best performance. So we test the arm. We do the worksheets on it's safe and healing for me, and I love it when I stay. It's safe and healing for me, and I love it when I leave. I'm okay if this person screams at me. I'm okay if this person hugs me. And it, when I can have the balanced response inside of myself for either of those, short of it being an abusive situation, that's my goal, is to be able to do enough work once I'm in a committed relationship to be able to be okay regardless of what the other person does. And then when I choose to walk away, I know I've made it, that choice from higher quality data points instead of the corrupt data that usually drives my distorted perception. So it's a real complex set of issues. Everybody has to decide for themselves. And one of the primary things that I coach people on is, if you're finding it abusive, find a way to change. Change yourself, change your location, change your participation in the relationship to end the abusive pattern. And if you've tried everything you can think of, and everything your friends and family can think of, and everything the professional therapist can think of, and you can't end the abuse of the pattern, then I recommend people leave. Because you can't be in a situation that's in a loop causing what you experience as an abusive pattern and still make corrective progress.
Yeah. I remember, if I had heard it from you or from someone else, but you can clean up a pig and give them a bath and get him smelling all great, but if you put them right back in the pig pen with the mud, they're still going to get mud
on
them.
They're going to go wallow in it. Yep.
And there's no way
to
stop that.
Well, I like the way Guy Finley talks about it. At one point, he's giving a talk and he says, you know, stay because you want to learn the lesson. Focus on yourself when you're upset, because every negative response you have gives you information about yourself.
Yeah.
And then he breaks and he says, now, let's make certain that we understand that if someone is being intentionally abusive, or if they're being unintentionally abusive and you can't break the pattern, if you've said to them what you feel you need in order to be safe or to stay there, and they don't change, and he gave some examples like, if you tell your best friend you don't want to be around racist jokes, right? If you tell your partner that you don't want to be sworn at and name-called, and they continue to do the behavior that you have labeled unacceptable, then, and listen to this wording very carefully, he says, then you are not responsible for what they put themselves through when you leave.
Yeah.
I'll say it again, because it's very important. It's very important because those words contain the recognition that each of us create our own emotions. So if my partner gets upset when I leave, because he or she keeps swearing at me or name-calling after I've said, this is not acceptable. When I leave and he or she puts themselves through depression or anger or bitterness or hurt, I'm not responsible for that. So that was Guy Finley's way of talking about knowing that my upset in a relationship is good information for me about what I need to heal, at the same time discussing how important it is to leave abusive situations rather than stay.
Right.
So if you had a more specific question, I would try to help address it, but that's the best general answer I have for that. How do you know? It's different for everybody.
Yeah.
One of the things is, you know, and this comes up a lot, is people say, I want a relationship with this person, and I want them to do this, this, and this, so that they're going to be acceptable to me.
Good wives are supposed to, you know, fix up the husband to make them.
That's the insanity. That's the insanity of our culture. I love you. You're perfect. Now change.
Now change. Well, and I keep thinking, well, you know, this is, there's nothing I can do to make him change because, or I was originally thinking, there's nothing I can do to make him change because I didn't get him when he was young, and it's a second marriage, so he's kind of stuck in his ways. So if I had, you know, found him younger, then I would have been able to, you know, raise him upright. And that's just totally wrong. That's against everything about taking ownership of our own feelings and allowing him to take ownership of his feelings, which is hard. I don't know if it's harder for me to, I think it's almost harder for me to believe that and allow that than it is for me to understand that I'm, like, I get it. I'm in charge of my own feelings. But I'm still struggling to apply that to others that they're in charge of their own feelings.
Well, the conditioning is very, very strong. And my job is to identify and then dismantle any of the conditioning that I find in me that isn't producing good results. And if I look at somebody and I say, wow, they're wonderful, I'd like to be with them, if only they would, then that's my conditioning kicking in. My conditioning that says, I have the right to, or I should, or I have the ability to change other people. And that's all in error.
Or even my belief that there is a proper way to behave or a correct way to act or react.
Exactly. I forget
now,
what it was, but I recently had an example that had come to mind about being raised in a different culture. And it's just, it's mind-boggling how intense that conditioning is for us. I mean, I was at a certain age, and if I saw people hold their spoon or fork a different way than the way my parents had taught me was the polite way, I would want to go over and correct them. It's insane, right? Because, you know, you come from a different country, and they've got a completely different set of rules about what's right and what's wrong and what's polite.
Yeah. And it's funny that I was able to be more open to that concept about other cultures and their beliefs and their right or wrong. But yet, when I think that we're from the same culture, it's like, well, we both grew up in the Northwest suburbs. We're both about the same age. We should have, you know, I know we have similar values, so
therefore he or she should think the way I do.
The same way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He or she should value the same things I value.
Yeah. Now, when I'm an upset, or when I'm upset and when I'm thinking somebody else is wrong or somebody else has wronged me, and I'm like, I catch it and I'm like, well, you know, they didn't do something wrong to me. You had talked, I don't know if it was on the radio show, but about another gentleman choosing again or choose again.
Yeah. Yeah, choose-again.com, Diedrich Wolsack, and this is a system that's very, very similar to Dr. Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet, only his is a six-step process, and you don't need to write anything down. And if you go to choose-again.com, there's something that's available absolutely free, just like Michael and Jeannie's Reality Management Worksheet. You can just click on it, download it, print it off. His name is Diedrich Wolsack, W-O-L-S-A-K. And you can get access to that at choose-again.com.
And he talks something about looking at the earliest, trying to think of the earliest memory where you felt that way or experienced that type of reaction.
Yep.
I think that's kind of what comes up when we do the breathing and we ask in the worksheet process where we ask to be shown.
Exactly. Right? It's the very same process. I'm not upset about what's going on in my life today. I'm upset because something about the way I'm interpreting what's happening today is resonating my old traumatic memories and my negative beliefs about myself. And everything about Michael and Jeannie's tools and everything about Diedrich Wolsack's tool is about uncovering the negative beliefs about myself and seeing them as false.
Right. And I'm actually talking to you holding my sleeping grandson, who is 3.5 months old. So remembering that newborn full of love and...
is who you are.
Actually,
it's your essence. That same essence is in you at your core and has never changed. It's never been chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. And that's what every worksheet asks you to remember at the beginning before you start. And then get to step four and remind yourself of it again and strengthen that energy and tap into it before you proceed. Because the healing, the integration, the processing that's going to happen in a worksheet comes from the conscious awareness of that energy. That energy is always present in you. It's never gone anywhere. The problem is you've lost focus of it, so you're not conscious of it. And the dynamic that creates change and healing in that worksheet process is driven by your ability to keep that awareness conscious, active, and present.
Yeah.
So I realize that we're down to our last minute of the first hour. Please feel free to hold. I will mute you so you can keep listening or tune in again later. Thank you for the call and the questions. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks. Same to you. Have a great show.
Thanks. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, July the 9th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in, and I will direct you to our website. We fixed a whole bunch of glitches that were on it. If you find something else, please drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know the URL at the address of the page that is having a problem, and we'll get it corrected. It's coming together really well. I'm pleased with it. We still need to work on the shopping cart. We're going to a different means of doing that. It didn't transfer very pretty. So we will be working on that, but it will probably be after our trip. Michael and I will be leaving on Sunday morning early and taking my dad to Knoxville to my brother's, and he's going to be keeping him for the week, and we're going to head straight on up to St. Louis, Missouri, and get there in time for dinner with Krista, that's Michael's daughter, and seeing the new grandbaby, which will be a year old next month, and this will be the first time that we've laid eyes on her in person. And so we're excited about that and spending some time with Adeline and Krista and Aaron and the whole family. We'll be there for 3 days, and then we'll be going over to Kansas City, Missouri, and spend time with his son, Michael J., and the family there. And then after that, we'll be heading down to Heartland to pick up some things to bring back down here to Bristol. And so we will get back on the 19th or 20th. And so hold the space for us to have safe travels. It's a lot of miles in a short period of time, but we're looking forward to it. Welcome, Michael.
Thank
I hear
you,
dear you breathing,
heart.
Yes. So I know you're there.
We are. We are definitely looking forward to it. I'm looking forward, and especially to embracing our new granddaughter that we haven't even met yet. She's almost been in the earth for a year, and we're going to see her for the first time on Sunday. How cool is that? Beyond that, thank you all for joining us. Honored and delighted that you're here. Honored and delighted that we get the opportunity to invest our time, intelligence, money, and energy into making this ancient first century technology available on a global scale, and to be able to support those who have an interest in the process is just I'm not even sure what the word is, but it's akin to gratitude and appreciation for the opportunity to do this and for the awesome benefit of being able to engage in this work personally and to be able to move it around the globe. And I still have people that tell me I'm crazy when we talk about, for 40 years we traveled and we did our workshops free and we paid our own expenses. And it's like, well, you're crazy. How can you do that? Well, here's how you can do it. If you've got something that is truly there to serve people, then serve people instead of serving money. And, certainly money becomes a part of the equation. Actually, the first year we were at Heartland, 1979, I did that first season. And we did it the same way as, when we traveled. We do a workshop and say, if you like what you got, support us with donations. Free. Truly is. We're not asking for anything, but if. And it was always a conditional request. If you like what you got and you think it's worth supporting getting to others, then please do. And that first summer at Heartland, we had people who would come in, let's say they did a 9-day, why is this happening to me and again intensive? So they'd be using hot water and electricity in a building, and we'd have a chef there and would do food, and they'd eat the food. And then after 9 days of that, they really felt like they did something awesome when they donated $100. Of course, if we'd have stuck with that plan there, we'd have been out of business a long time ago. That's, if you look at centers when they start up, they usually go bankrupt in the first year. And two different reasons. One of them is the financial aspect. Nobody has any idea what it takes to keep 17 acres and 15 buildings going with people in and out and back and forth and up and down. And then the second big factor that I think destroys centers is the non-human dynamics that show up, the hostility and fear-based minds that show up. And they're sure that when they're in hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief, that it's all somebody else's fault. And so things get to be crazy time.
So we've been there and done that for the last three decades, and we're honored and delighted to be able to keep moving forward. Of course, we've changed our venue with COVID. You know, last summer we didn't open at all, and this summer we chose, with all the COVID stuff going on, to let that summer season go. But we've transitioned everything to the field of online, which is giving us a whole different opportunity to bring work on a new level. This last intensive we did, we had people from Thailand, from Hawaii, from Sweden, and just about every corner of the earth. Or pardon me, of the country. They were the ones outside the country, but in essence, every corner of America. So it was pretty cool to be able to be in one place and provide that service. And it was interesting. We had people who really fed back, and I was kind of surprised. I was a little concerned, you know, about, well, how are intensives going to go? Usually people are there. They can look at each other. They can talk to each other. They can process. And I was a little concerned about how it's going to work online. But the feedback we got from several people was that they loved it more than an in-person intensive, because the whole time, instead of, you know, sitting in a classroom looking up toward the front of the classroom, they're looking at a Zoom screen with, you know, all 25 people in the intensive having their facial reactions to everything, to the teaching, to the process work, to the questions, to the answers, to the still point breathing, the whole thing. So it was pretty cool. And now, you know, we now have in the can 90 hours, pardon me, of intensive process work with people. The first intensive was 14 weeks of 4 hours a week. And that included just straight up teaching. It included question and answer sessions. It included process work. There was all kinds of stuff that went on in that intensive. So we have all of that video footage. And we have permission from everyone to video it and make it available. If there was anyone who had a restriction on the wish to be videoed, if they were processing something personal, whatever, we would just stop the camera. And then we completed that, and that gave us I don't even know what number of hours it was, but it was quite a few. And then we did a second video where we used that as the foundation. And then with that workshop, so there was a self-study component, and then there was a live component where 2 hours a week, every Wednesday night for, what did we do, 16 or 17 weeks, Gene? I think 17 weeks. We did a live two-hour session, so that's all part of the package that, if you are ready to do a codependency interdependence communication practicum, and in that intensive, we cover why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, mind shifters, and still point breathing, codependence to interdependence. So included all those topics. So there's the teaching component, and then there's the processing component that we did with the individuals in the intensive, and questions and answers. And then the second intensive that we did, so that was the foundation, that footage, that video was the foundation for the second intensive, which was self-study, and then 2 hours a week of personal interaction. So it's pretty profound, and we put that whole package together, and now we have a 90-hour program of self-study. You can pick that up and buy the package, and you've got permanent access to streaming of 90 hours of video work on the topic, why is this happening to me again, codependence to interdependence, communication, and healing through relationships. And so you can review it as often as you like, as deeply as you like, and in so doing, review, you've got a permanent process-oriented intensive. And that whole package, if you would have an interest in doing it, you could drop Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org. and make the inquiry, give her your phone number, and I'll touch back in with you. We'll have a conversation and see if it's something appropriate to do. But that whole package, permanent access, plus Yurate did this fabulous job of doing a food program. When we do an intensive live, we do a total fresh and raw food program at Heartland. And so we wanted to provide that support, and Yurate stepped up to the plate and created a private Facebook page, and she created just this awesome material for supporting people, getting to the understanding of how to do a healthier lifestyle. So there are videos and question and answers and recipes and lists of what kitchen equipment you need and lists of, you know, there's 14 weeks of live food, fresh and raw. What do you need to buy? Where can you buy it? When do you buy it? I mean, she just did a fabulous job of putting all of that together. And we are deeply, deeply appreciative of that, Yurate and Tom, for the work that you did to put that together so that we can provide that support. And that's all part of the intensive. And there's an app called Trello, which has all of the recipes, beautiful color pictures. And I mean, it's just really well done. So all of that's included in that $600 package. And if you choose to do that, it's a self-study. You pace yourself in it. It includes two personal code evaluations. So you start out, you do a personal code evaluation, and we'll give you feedback. This evaluation is something that's based on the MMPI. It's an abbreviated MMPI, which is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. But we specifically isolated out things that are based in people's personal code. And a personal code is a set of rules your mind forces you to follow. Like, let's use an example. So I go to a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. I discover that I am love. I discover that you are love. And I am sure that forevermore I will be in a space of love with you, and that's the way it will be. And sure enough, you are. Until the next time that person you just made that commitment to gives you the look. And what's your personal code require? You look at me like that again and I'll... And what happens? Personal code take. Now I say to myself, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go there. Well, the work is to change the personal code, to change the automatic decision system content through forgiveness, especially, and removing the hostility and fear-based dynamics of this non-being mind. So the personal code evaluation breaks your personal code down into 10 areas, 10 arenas. You know, it looks at stress management. It looks at how you honor others, honor self, honor truth, how much fear you have, how much hostility you have, how you're doing with nutrition, digestion, toxicity. It looks at your relationship with laws of living, which really comes down to, do you play the victim role or not? It looks at the use of will and consistency or validity, whether you're, you know, I mean, if you've got someone who, say, for instance, one day they're hot to go on, yeah, man, I'm going to do my healing right, and the next day they're like, I don't want anything to do with that stuff, the next day they're, well, that's a consistency or validity challenge. So there's a scale in there that tells people if their minds, if they're double-minded and how. And then you're given assignments. There's actually a full two-hour video where we walk through the feedback on the personal code evaluation and say, okay, so if your challenge is in the arena of, let's say, honoring others, then here's what you do about it. Here's how you change the contents of your mind. If it's honoring self, you know, if let's say somebody gives you a compliment, you go, oh, no, you don't honor self. That's part of your personal code. Oh, no, well, I'm supposed to be small. I'm supposed to, instead of, you know, getting a compliment and just being able to say thank you and receiving that energy. That's a major factor in people's lives. They say, oh, I want the best, I want the best, I want the best. But when the best comes along, what do? Oh, turn it down. No, not me. I don't deserve it. Well, that's a challenge in the personal code, and your evaluation will show you if that's a challenge for you, and then we'll give you some tools for how to repair it, how to change it. And then at the end of the intensive, there's a second personal code evaluation you get to do. So you get to compare, and you see how much progress you've made. You know, when you look at all the assignments you're given, you know whether you did them or not. You know whether you were integrity with yourself or not. And you'll see exactly what your gains were by being integrity. Or if in, let's say, one of the areas you go, no, I'm not touching that work. too painful for me, I'm not going there, then you'll see that your score stayed pretty much the same. And so when people get to see that, it becomes a powerful motivator to take their lives to the next level. So all of that's included in the package. And if you decide to do the package, then the next thing that's included is that when we do that intensive again in the future, if we do another codependence to interdependence communication practicum, you can join that live intensive online. We're talking about online now. You can join that live online intensive by simply paying the difference between the live online program and the program that you already bought. So there's no extra cost involved. You can just upgrade to it. And then once you've done that, whenever we do that particular intensive, you're a guest. You only pay for it once. That's one of the beauties we've found. You know, when we had a center, we couldn't do that. You know, you got food, you got taxes, you got all the stuff that goes on. Where this way, once we've got the material together and we can go online, we can, you know, ultimately basically have an unlimited number of people. So once you become a participant in an online intensive, in the future, you will be welcomed as a guest in any codependence to interdependence communication practice we do in the future. So that's what that's about, and it's sort of been a whole different way of approaching the work that's opened a powerful space. As I said earlier, I was a little concerned how well is this going to work, but when we looked at the personal code evaluation score changes, it's just about the same as a live intensive. So it's pretty cool to have been able to set that up and do it and make that work available. We created, and at this point, and I don't know for the future, but my guidance at this point is that we've created a new, I forget what it was, an 11-page PowerPerson worksheet, and we're going to restrict that to the codependence to interdependence intensive at this point because there's so much data and so much material that it takes an intensive to comprehend it and really make use of it. It's kind of like a super extended inventory if you've ever done any 12-step work. Kind of goes along with that, but it really looks at and supports people in developing the ability to step back from their own minds and be able to, you know, kind of become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and really step into a new level of living life consciously. So that's what we're about these days, and we're looking at, if you have an interest, again, drop Jeannie a note or give me a call if you've got my number. We're looking at probably this fall, if there's enough interest, pardon me, we might be able to convince Jeannie to do an online Women Healing Women intensive, which would be awesome. That would probably be a 14-week. And or we're looking at doing a teacher training. Why is this happening to me again? Teacher training. Normally that's a 9-day why is this happening to me again intensive, and which includes a whole range of workshops and then 9 days of teacher training. That will probably be a 16-week intensive. And or we're looking at perhaps doing laws of living. And I'm not sure how long an intensive that's going to be yet. That's got a lot more material that we cover, you know, that's required to be covered to complete the course. So if you're interested in any of those things, drop us a note, let us know. We'd love to support you. And beyond that, I'm going to turn to the final paragraphs in the chapter on choosing teachers, chapter 14, in Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I'm going to read a few paragraphs, have a little conversation about that, and then open the lines. So the idea we're talking about here is to recognize whether a particular teaching or teacher is really going to serve you or not. So people who play from the side of abuse and manipulation tend to create false ways of thinking that keep people subject to their abuse and manipulation. And so that would be what we would classify as the false teacher. And the benefits of whatever that false teacher is doing will accrue to the teacher rather than to the student, to the individual engaged. So I'm talking to Richard in terms of that process, and we're down to just the last few minutes of our conversation on this topic. And I offer Richard the thought, when people who need their daily dose of abuse are confronted, response is usually the familiar, I thought that was the way it was supposed to be. Their self-put downs are cradled in guilt and haunting thought that they deserve to be abused. Well, I'm here to offer to all the world that that is the biggest fraud that ever came to Earth. Human beings, in no way, shape, or form, no human being, and I don't care who it is, has ever deserved any form of abuse whatsoever. Hostility and fear visited upon a child or anyone after childhood is a crime. It is a crime against humanity. Now, you can take a look at the number of false teachers in virtually every realm out there, and you'll see that it's being done all the time. You know, you look at the prison system. You know, we went into the prison system with Laws of Living. The course was actually created, and we cut recidivism by over 90%. In one particular jail where we used it, the sheriff became so outraged because we put him out of business. He didn't have any repeat customers. He got his money from the state for a per diem rate for everybody that was in his jail. When he didn't have anybody, he didn't have any money. So he got rid of the program. Hostility, fear, and punishment are like done on planet Earth. It's time for it to be over. Now, if somebody trained you, if a false teacher trained you that no, hostility and fear and punishment, that's the way we correct people. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I mean, that's the biggest pants on fire lie that's ever been told. Nobody has ever improved their lives for being punished. And, yep, I know people who've been brainwashed by the false teacher. I've heard them by the dozens over the years. Well, my father, he beat me, my mother, but it never hurt me. It's like, yeah, really? Let me breathe you and take you back to the moment of the first time you were assaulted, even if the assault was just a dirty look. Let me take you back to that time in your tender soul being and tell me how it didn't hurt. It is those times that created the dynamic we call the power person dynamic. And the moment at which we gave up that tender state of being who we are as love and took on as normal the hostilities and fears and the identity of someone who deserved that is the moment of the deepest rage. We went from physiology being fueled. You know, if you look in the East, they talk about nirvana. And the objective of it is to live in nirvana. What's that? A heavenly estate. That's where your structure is just so touched by love that you live in complete joy and delight. Now, you'll notice that Yeshua had the same teaching when they said to him, oh, no, it's up in the sky. It's after we die. He said, if somebody tells you that the kingdom of heaven is over there or over there or over there, don't believe them. It is here. It is now. It is within you. Now, he was confronting the false teachers. Why did they kill him? Because he confronted them and took away their power. They lied to us. It's here. It's now. It's within you. It's called life. And you remember, Yeshua said, I come to bring you life. And so, now, is the prison system in this culture as we exist now necessary? Oh, 2,000%. Life would be tough without it. There's an interesting segment. You know, let's see, what's his name? The guy who did Bowling for Columbine. His name will come to me. In any event, or Jeannie will probably come up with it for me. He did a movie called Where the U.S. Should Invade Next or something to that effect. And basically what he did is he went around the world and looked at all the places where they've taken some of the great true ideas that came from true teachers in America but were destroyed by the false teachers in America and leave us in this punishment system and in this punitive system and this school system where kids are allowed to be beaten, punished, you know. And he went around the world and looked at places where they took these awesome ideas and showed how it works. Powerful film. One of the things he shows, and I don't remember what country it was. It's been a few years since I've seen the film. But he goes to, I think it's one of the Scandinavian countries. And they have criminals who live in nice housing developments. They realize they've committed a crime. And they're not beaten or put in isolation or, you know. In America, I mean, we know from the research that people who are put in isolation cells go nuts. And they've built prisons, tens of thousands of cells designed to keep people in isolation, and we're still putting people there. And they know it drives people nuts. That's the false teacher controlling the buck for the almighty buck. But this particular system that he goes into, these people live nicely. They live in nice homes. They're isolated from their families and their homes. Visitors can come. But there's no – and you know what? They don't need guards. People don't run away. They don't try to escape. They have a system where people come to understand, I really screwed up, and I should be taken out of the society for a time period. And they do that, and they do that willingly, and they come back into society with their decency restored, with their integrity, with their human lives restored. Like, what a radical idea that one is. Time for us to wake up, folks. It's time for everything to do with false teachers, and that means everything to do with hostility and fear to be disappeared from planet Earth. Within our political system, within our economic system, within our social system, within our educational system, within our prison system, all of it needs to be disappeared if we want to actually have a planet of human beings that function like humans. And so, I mean, we're back to the conversation with Richard. You know, the person who gets abused said, well, I thought that's supposed to be. Richard listened attentively and appeared to absorb each idea. This is such shocking information, Michael. The part of this that's hard to believe is how oblivious I've been to it all my life. I guess you could say I've been like the person in the prison who thought that's just the way life is. We all have, to some degree, been trained in the fear of the world. Each of us, to some extent, has been seduced and engaged in manipulative behavior. Perhaps that is why most people would rather admit, talk about, and acknowledge the fact that they intimidate others. Pardon me, I should say, would rather not. They do not face themselves as you are now, Richard. So Richard's starting to look at those parts of himself that's done that sort of thing and realize how self-destructive it is. You know, one of the points we make of this when you realize that we are energetic beings is, and it's the last line on the worksheet in the forgiveness process, is I get the original, they get the carbon copy. People say, well, you know, that person over there, they really deserve to be beaten and abused and punished. And I say, you know what? I saw what they did, and I agree with you. They deserve it. But guess what? If you're the one who originates it, guess who gets the energy, energetic original of that beating or that punishment? You do. So the real question is, do you deserve it? And if you don't, maybe it's time to let that stuff go. Richard was on the edge of emotion surfacing, but could not quite let go. Seeing the pained look on his face, I added, I acknowledge your courage and your willingness to hear new information, Richard. That can be an especially difficult task when it involves looking at our own errors or the errors of the people we cherish. It can be even more difficult when we start to let go of the parts of us that need to be released and healed. And then there's a key thought to finish this chapter out, and that is, it requires courage to look at ourselves. Having tools makes looking at easier and more productive. So that completes our chapter on choosing teachers and looking at what qualities of energies we support in the world and engage in. And, you know, we all start out engaging in the ones that fit with our family culture and our family system. And so it's time to start looking at, and perhaps it will seem like, well, now I'm going to be criticizing my parents. Well, we're not going to suggest you criticize anybody, but we are going to suggest that you assess honestly, was this energy based in human life, in love, or was it based in hostility or fear? And if it was based in hostility or fear, are you ready to be done with it? Because you don't deserve it. And so that's where we're heading with everything that we're doing, and we're honored and delighted to be able to play today with you. And through the magic of technology, when this show is over, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and if you look at the microphone on the home page, click on it, it'll walk you right through a whole series of how-to tools for engaging in the forgiveness process. www.whyagain.org is the homepage. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, you're on one of the ones we're syndicated on, if you want to join the conversation, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you push one, it'll raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to talk with us. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have everybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We actually have two hands up. So the first
awesome.
One.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
We haven't heard from her in a while. 520, I believe this is Audrey.
Well, hey, young lady,
yes,
welcome.
Thank you. I just tuned in this morning briefly, and I was dealing with a situation, and then I heard you speak about worthiness, and I wanted to run something by you. Well,
go for it.
In my past background as a child, I had a lot of abuse. And as
right.
I do my inner work, I'm progressing towards wellness.
You have to confront that stuff, don't you?
I am well. I just dissolved the blocks. Someone who is a friend of mine had said he will buy an RV for me. Now, I don't know if he truly means this or not. And he will, it's not a new one, but he will either give me the money, put it in my account for me to buy it, or he could put it in his name. Now, Michael, this is nothing about an RV. Okay, the RV is a stimulus. Whether it happens
okay.
or not, I'm still dealing with the issue. I asked, does this
right.
person, is this person doing it for his secondary gain? And if I consent to this and say thank you, what is it about me that I feel unworthy? Because
well,
that's
you know,
a lot. Unworthiness.
Yeah. Audrey, when we go through a childhood of abuse, there are many, many errant messages delivered to us by our power person and or made up in our minds out of our genetics about what's wrong with us, about why we deserve it. You know, every child wants to think of their person as their power, parent as a god. And so what do? They make it up. Well, you know, this is God and I must deserve this. There must be something wrong with me. Oftentimes the messages are things like you're broken. You should have been a boy. You should have been a girl. You should have, you know, there are all of these insane messages that were given. A couple of years ago, we did a thing up in Michigan where they have an art festival all around the city. And one of the displays is one that really made a deep impression on me, and that was an artist had a a life-size mannequin of a woman, and this mannequin had her face in her hand down at her side and had no face. And written all over the body were the messages, basically the power person messages that oftentimes women are given. For instance, the one that struck me the deepest, the one that just was like a shocker that someone would say this. It's not something I'd ever even heard of before, could imagine. But one of the messages was, I wish you would die so that I can have a good life.
Wow.
So you look at the thought disorders that we take on and buy into, and it happens to both men and women, but I think to women, oftentimes, especially reinforced on another level with physical abuse, although I've worked with a lot of young men who've been brutalized by their fathers and by their mothers, so it's not exclusive territory. But if you look at those kinds of messages, then yes, if somebody comes along and says, here, let me give you this, well, wait a minute, I don't deserve anything. And it could be anything. A message delivered of, I'm broken, there's something wrong with me, I'm defective, I'm unworthy, I don't even, you know, deserve to have breath. They're the kinds of thought disorders that people have. And so in your saying thank you, I would support you breathing and really watching what your mind is telling you about yourself, and then do specific worksheets around those messages. And if you'd like, I've got a mind shifter for you.
Thank you. Yes.
Got a pen handy?
Wait. I'm sorry.
Sure, I will. I will.
Yes.
You deserve that.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I'm finding the pen.
Fully.
And I realized a lot of times I'm operating from being shame-based. Okay, the pen's here, the paper.
Oh, yeah, that sin message is pretty disastrous for people. That's like one of the primo insane messages of the false teacher is you're a sinner.
Yeah.
And you look at how that goes, I mean, fully around the country, around the so-called, and I say it very, very deeply, being conscious, so-called Christian world, because that is one of the most un-Christian messages that anybody could ever give to anyone. You know, if you look at Yeshua, well, the Pharisees were saying, what are you doing hanging around with that woman? He says, hey, if you're without sin, cast the first stone. And everybody left because he stood there as a space of love for anyone and everyone, no matter what their thought disorder was. He was there to support their healing. And so that sin message is just a travesty and a tragedy for anybody to pretend they know anything about the teachings of this man, Yeshua, and to use that as a proclamation. It is an absolute, total, and complete disaster and leads to thought disorders just beyond control, beyond compare. So the mind shifter I would suggest is, I, Audrey, deserve to be cherished and blessed.
Yes.
By anyone, and everyone I meet.
Thank you. Yes.
Anything happening with your breath?
It's breathing.
Stop.
Nice and easy.
Okay. So there's what? Wait a minute. There's one more piece to the mind shifter. So by anyone and everyone I meet, comma.
Yes.
Especially by the person I look at in the mirror.
Yes. Okay. Got it.
Awesome.
Yeah, big
smile
on the face.
So I support you doing that. You know, that's a big issue, and I'd suggest you set aside at least a 3 or 4 hour block of time where your phone is off You're totally in your own space, and you start writing, and you just let yourself drop into deeper and deeper and deeper hidden parts of the mind. You may find yourself going right down into your genes and accessing genetic information along these lines and bringing that energy up for healing. So I'd support you just, and, you know, whatever, once you complete the writing of the mind shifter, then go back and look at every thought disorder that you've uncovered and then use, you know, you've got a series of different tools. So use the tools that you've got to clean up those thought disorders.
Okay, because Michael, this came into my field of awareness. I was inside my living room, inside my house on the living room couch.
Right.
And a person walked in, rang the bell, walked in and told me, well, there's this RV for sale, and I talked to this person, and, you know, would you like it? Two of Mastery, where it says, I need do nothing. Okay, I
right.
need do nothing. I mean, and then I said, I didn't ask for the, I never asked. Maybe I sent the thought forms out, so maybe I did ask the first cause of the universe for this for an RV. But I never went to this person and said, could you work with me so I could get an RV? I never said it to anyone. So
Once you think the thought, you've set up an energy field, and if there's somebody around that's in tune with that energy field, they're going to tend to be drawn to you. And when they're in your space, they're going to tend to play out or reflect. Now, whether that's the good, the bad, or the ugly is the key to that process. And, yes, life comes along and shows us what's going on inside of us and what we need to be looking at and dealing with.
Okay, so it's about sending and receiving, correct?
Yes.
Exactly. The energy, the thought form. Right. Okay. Yes, I found it, actually, Michael, I found it fun to do the inner work.
It's awesome.
kind of like being a swimmer in the beginning. It was hard to learn the free stroke
right.
and to swim and the discipline to swim
yep.
and swim and
yep.
swim. But when I see the result of the work, it becomes fun.
Yep. You got it, girl. That's it.
I'm swimming.
With you.
Yeah. Oftentimes when I'm swimming, I just have to say, just, you know, do it and be willing to do the inner work.
Audrey, I
yes.
acknowledge you and appreciate how gracefully you went through some really tough times with it too, when you were looking at some really deeply painful stuff and you wanted to back off, but you hung with it and you went through it. And that's just really awesome. And I'm delighted you're getting to, you know, enjoy the fruit of your labors because you worked hard at it.
I did. And I do. And as I clear up or dismantle the block within myself, I allow the good to come in, and I look at people and I don't project the judgment that's in within me. I just see them as neutral.
Nice. Nice work.
Thank
so
you.
So
Thank
people
you,
around you are getting the benefits too.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely, definitely.
Awesome. That is
Thank
awesome.
You.
All right, young lady, anything else on your mind for today?
I would be interested in if Jeannie does a woman's group. That's it. But that's just a
okay. Well, we'll
you.
Make sure to put your name on the list, and if she decides to do one, we'll make sure you're one of the first ones notified. She does. We were in Oak Island a couple of years ago, and she did one, and I was kind of the assist in that intensive. And the energy that moved and the healing that happened was just phenomenal with that group of women. It was monumental. There was one woman in particular that came into that intensive, and she had been to a series of workshops we did in one of the cities before we were doing that intensive, and she had been there each night, and she carried a stern, pained demeanor, voice, and appearance every interaction we had with her. She came to the intensive, she was angry, she was sullen, and, you know, it's just like life is hell was kind of the energy and the message. And by the end of that intensive, she was light and bubbly and happy and joyful. And I don't remember exactly what the time frame was. It was just a matter of a few months. She was getting married. And she's someone who'd been divorced, I don't know, a time or two previously. But she was like, she was ready to rock and roll, and she was just on it with her life. So that's it's really powerful when somebody steps up and does their work like that. So congratulations.
Yes, and as you were sharing this and the shift and the energy and the joy that comes through you as you are explaining this woman's journey. Yes, thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, it's just a delight to watch, and it was pretty awesome to watch Jeannie work with this group of women and the shifts and changes that took place. I mean, they dealt with some of the heaviest stuff. They dealt with physical abuse, with sexual abuse, with abortion, with miscarriages, with divorces. I mean, they covered the gamut, and it was really very powerful. So awesome work, Jeannie. You are amazing.
Thank you, Jeannie. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, blessings.
Any questions? Any questions for Jeannie?
No questions, just a comment. And thank you, Jeannie, for all your support.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you have a blessed one. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your input.
Thank you.
All right.
We have another hand up.
All right, let's say hello.
Area code 480, I believe this is Cecilia.
Hey, hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Hey, young lady. Welcome.
I did figure out where the videos were but I didn't get your email, Jeannie, till last night. I mean, I didn't check my email. So I did start watching the first one, evaluation video.
Cool.
Okay. Yes, and do I wait to watch the second video after the second evaluation, whenever that is?
No, go ahead and watch it now, too.
Okay.
That's all part of the grounding and the starting point.
Oh, okay.
For the intensives. So.
Out of that first video, I've heard this before, but I don't know if you're putting a different slant on the teachings in this introduction or in this first evaluation video. Because I've got
brain cells. Yeah, your brain cells are putting the slant on it. As you build the brain cells at each layer, at each level, your mind will be able to output a more complex, in-depth understanding of what's being spoken about. And if you, let's say you did the first, let's do it in a month. In fact, you might want to note your calendar. In a month, go back. Put a note on your calendar, go back and listen to that video again. And you'll go,
okay.
Oh, my God, have I ever heard that video? Because it'll have a whole other meaning in a month.
Okay, all right.
And that's the beauties of having that 90-hour video package. That will be that way for every hour. Each time you go back and review it, you know, when you go through the whole 90 hours, I mean, you're going to be building a huge repertoire of understanding of what's gone on in your life, what could go on in your life, and the repair work that you're doing. And then at the end of that 90 hours with all those brain cells, you go back to hour one, and it will be a totally, completely different course. And you should do that 20 times. It'll be a different course 20 times over, each time more advanced than the last.
Okay.
So rock and roll. It's awesome.
So the other thing is I got out of work seat yesterday for the so-called hate that I thought I didn't have from my first husband. And what came out, I'm not going into a long story this time, is...
Okay, good work.
If you guys would not have said do a worksheet on hate for your first husband because of regulatory speech, I said hate. I don't hate him, so obviously there's hate in there or something. And so that threw me because I didn't want to face that I had hate in me. So it took me like all day to finally sit down at night and go, okay, come on, we can figure this out. Well, so I actually came up with that I attracted him because of the hate, and I do remember how much hate I had for my mother and father, the way that they hated each other. Okay, I mean, here I am, like 10 years old, sitting at the anywhere at the kitchen table, thinking I want them to be divorced. You know, I'm 10. Yeah. In that day and age, you don't think a 10-year-old doesn't think that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I hated my father because he was a womanizer, and my mother just sat there and didn't even, she just had a mean look on her face her whole life. And I'm like, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this. And I never thought about ever getting married. Of course, I attracted 4 people I married, and each one, I recreated my parents' relationship.
Right.
Two.
Call the power person dynamic.
Yes. And didn't take responsibility for that. It was because I gave up my true essence and was just playing it out because I didn't want to let go of that hate. I don't know. I just wanted to relive the dynamics and hate my dad. I don't know. I really don't. I'm trying to get clarity on it. That's where I need you.
So it's called the loop. It's called the loop. You know, we have the mind of love in us, which in the ancient teachings is called the mind of Christ. And then we have what I call the replicant mind. And all the replicant mind knows how to do is repeat, repeat, repeat. It's going to keep being drawn back into the same situation where it can repeat, 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 repeat. And so when you wake up to that mind that's based in love, you start realizing, oh, I don't need to repeat. I don't need to live in this. And you start to change the dynamics.
Okay. So that's how much murderous rage I had in me towards him, but I wouldn't speak about it. I just let him act it out. Therefore, I was the victim. You see?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to really put that into words that are the actuality of what I did, how I contributed to that. I don't know if I'm clear enough on that for myself.
Yeah. You don't have to figure that out. All you need to do is forgive. All you need to do is forgive it. And I just sent you a link. I don't know whether I – go ahead. Excuse me.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
I don't know whether I had sent you earlier a link to the Father's Day message that I did for Unity of Columbia up in Columbia, Ohio.
Are you talking about earlier today?
Columbus. No, this goes back. This would have been a couple weeks ago. I sent it out to you. I don't know whether I sent it. Well, but anyway, I just sent it to you. And in the context of this conversation, that message will be profound for you.
I see. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Always had issues with my dad. It was like a crazy thing, though. It was like I hated him. He hated me. And I loved him, and he loved me. It's like the crazy, crazy extremes of hate, crazy extremes of love. And there was, it was all just some nothing at all about love. I'm looking in my email. Do you have the right email? Because
I just texted it to you.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Okay, so that's what I did, and I did a lot of writing on it. I condensed it for the sake of everybody here. And I asked that it be removed, the hate. So therefore, I hope that doing work, I'm sure I have to keep doing it and keep doing it. But when the time comes, that it's the right time for the right reason and the right time. And I've done my work enough that I've cleared myself out. I'm going to attract a relationship based on love. Okay, I'm based on who I am, who they are. So.
Yeah. You allow, you know, now you're talking about the work of Yeshua. You know, Yeshua says one thing. I come for only one reason. I come to, and there's nothing religious about this. It's like he's here to bring life. I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. That's the presence of love. When you live in the presence of love, then you create relationships based in love. If there's anything in you that's unlike love, now just be aware of this. If there's anything still left in you that's unlike love, when somebody comes along and gives you the eye, and you give them the eye, it's like, whoa, this could work. Be aware that, especially once the honeymoon is over for most people, that there's going to be work to do, and it's going to bring up a whole different level of what needs to be healed. And keep doing your work, and you will come to the point where you have what I like to call a 5-H relationship.
Of what? Of what age? What?
You'll come to the point where you will create a conscious 5-H relationship.
Are you saying 5-H like in the 5, like the number,
yes,
and H?
The number 5-H, yes.
Well, what does that stand for?
It stands for happy, holy, healing, healthy, healthy, and horny.
Okay,
we all deserve that.
That sounds very healthy. Here's the deal. The funny thing is, I got involved in the Course in Miracles, God knows, 2003, 2001 or something, and I met Ted in 2006 or 7, and this is my fourth husband, and the one you met. And I tell you, I purposely told my friend who I was involved in the course with that this is going to be a relationship, a holy relationship, and not a special relationship. And throughout the whole first couple years of the relationship with Ted, I was doing the Course in Miracles course still, even when I moved here. And he hated it. He hated it. But eventually he started going with me, and he said he liked it. So I thought, this is great, you know. But I was leaning on that to help me have this holy relationship, you know, the 5-H relationship, the Course in Miracles. And somehow that wasn't enough for me. I needed this work, obviously, but I don't know. I mean, I hope I'll know when I do enough work that I can have a 5-H relationship.
Well, there's a section in the front of my book entitled Life Without Tools. And the bottom line of it is that life without tools is hell.
Yes.
And people who don't have the tools to process through what is going to come up. Now, what's going to come up? Whatever's in you that's unlike love is going to come up for healing if you're truly going to move into a real relationship based in being. And that means that all hell breaks loose. I mean, it gets to be crazy time. But if I've got the tools and I keep remembering, oh, I'm feeling rage. Now, my mind has got a whole thought disorder. I'm enraged because you did this. You said that. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Let me take a breath for a minute. I have some tools. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm enraged. I have rage. I need to forgive my rage. Well, but they did. It doesn't matter what they did. If I'm enraged, if I'm in sadness, if I'm in fear, if I'm in hate, if I'm in pain, my mind is off base, and I need to take care of my mind and heal it. My partner needs to do the same. But when we start with matching bags of garbage, the mind can be so tricky in convincing us that my pain is about you. But it's a lie, and all you need are tools to clean it up. So, and we're down to the last minute or so, so thank you for the questions.
Yeah, sure. Will.
And we'll hold you in a blessing.
I will get through it.
All right, take care. Everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.